Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to your community radio station, KRBD Ketchikan. I'm Maria Dudzak, and we have been announcing that we are having a call-in show today where you can offer recipe tips for the holidays or get some tips here. Also call in with your questions. The numbers are 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. And joining us this morning are culinary creative people, Cameo McRoberts and Lindsay Johnson. And didn't you like win one of those cooking contests or something?
Lindsay, she did. I judged it.
Okay. Yeah. Oh,
yeah. It wasn't rigged, I swear.
Yeah, so maybe explain a little bit about your cooking backgrounds or your interest in cooking. We'll start with Lindsay.
Well, I'm more of a home cook. Cameo's a trained cook. I'm a home cook. But I got interested, I don't know, maybe about 10 years ago. I just wanted to make things that I did, you know, I'd eat out at restaurants. I was a waitress for about 12 years and a bartender, and I was always in the back of the kitchen asking the chefs way too many questions while they were trying to do a really difficult job. I started learning from them and just went off from there.
Would you say, you're a home cook, was there anything that you would call your area you really like, a particular recipe or a particular type of thing you like to cook when you cook?
I just do everything.
Anything.
Really. I'm not a big baker, though.
Yeah. I do bake. Couple, that I can do.
Yeah, we've
cooking,
done a couple of the cookbook club kind of stuff. And, Lindsay has great taste in food and great taste in cooks because she had me cater her wedding. And that was kind of our little introduction to each other through culinary stuff. I graduated here in Ketchikan and immediately got a couple jobs on cruise ships out of high school and started cooking on cruise ships and worked there until I could go no further. And so I went to culinary school, moved to Chicago, worked for Rick Bayless at Frontera Grill in Topolobampo. And then I was the sous chef in charge of the sustainable seafood program, which that was all on my badge. And then moved back to Seattle and worked for a consulting company for food and beverage, and then moved home here. So I have a little bit of experience in the culinary world.
And I know you do like you enjoy cooking. Definitely,
I
wouldn't
do.
Wouldn't be doing it probably if you didn't.
No, I would love to do it more. And
she's so good.
And Lindsay, sometimes she can see into my kitchen from our apartment. So when I first moved into my apartment, I got a text message that said, "Are you making hollandaise sauce?" And I just kind of looked around.
Like, who is this from above?
I was making lemon curd. So that tells you how easily she can see into my kitchen.
And have you had a lot of people ask you questions about cooking?
Yeah. I started the Facebook page, the K-Town Kitchen Guild, which we've slowed up a little bit lately, but kind of one of those things where people were asking each other around for different ingredients, harissa, tahini, tempeh, like weird little things that you're never entirely sure what you can get at the grocery store. So we kind of started that Facebook page just to pass along food information. And I'm constantly getting text messages from friends that are like, "How long is this supposed to cook? When do I do this? And what should I make?" So, yeah.
Okay, so we have Thanksgiving coming up. Lots of people make their turkeys. Mm-hmm. Do either of you have any turkey tips?
Yes, turkey tip number one. If your turkey is not thawed out right now, today, stop what you're doing, drive home, pull it out of the freezer, because I think it takes about a half an hour for every 5 pounds, and the only thing you're going to be able to do on Thanksgiving morning if it's not thawed out now is pop that sucker in the freezer or in the oven. I've tried brining them. I've never deep fried a turkey. I know that's super.
We're doing it this year.
Yeah, I saw that.
By we, I mean my friend, and I'm going to stand back and, you know. They have the proper tools now, but when I first heard of this doing it and they were talking about, "Well, maybe we'll just put it in the crab pot." I'm like, please don't do that. But it should be interesting.
Yeah, and that actually is something that's a good point is be safe. When you do the deep fry thing, because we did have a couple incidents. No, I don't think this last year, but like 2 years ago where things caught on fire because it was on a porch that was wooden. some splattered about and caught it on fire. And it's one of those, you have to watch that.
Exactly.
And make sure it's away from anything flammable.
And now, that's said at the family dinner table throughout the years. And if you are the recipient of that one, you'll go down in history. But the other thing, I think brining turkeys is a really good option if you can do it. They sell really cool brining bags the brining of the turkey, a lot of people think that it is infusing salt and all this stuff. And really, I mean, it's giving it a little bit of adding a little bit of salt to it. But the salt helps break down the proteins in the meat and kind of gives you a juicier, more tender turkey. It also helps it retain water so that when you're cooking it, it doesn't lose as much water. And especially if your turkey's thawed out, you can put the brine in there, put it in a brining bag, throw it in the refrigerator, and you're good to go until Christmas or until then you have a tiny little chewy turkey, but until Thanksgiving morning. And so that's one of the ones that I always recommend.
And what do you put in a brine?
Well, funny you should ask. There's a ton of different things. One of the ones I was kind of looking around on the internet, a website that I really do like is kitchen.com. It's KITCHN.
I've done that one. That's a good one.
Yeah. And I feel like I've done recipe research and recipe writing for internet, and I will say that you do not have to. A lot of people don't check their recipes. A lot of the ones like on allrecipes.com, and I'm not trying to berate anybody's website, but just make sure you read through a recipe, and if something doesn't look right or it misses some steps, it's probably hasn't been tested. And so Kitchen definitely has recipes that have been tested. They have a lot of cool culinary tricks, kind of teach you how to cook stuff. But found a couple brine recipes on there. Usually it's a particular proportion of salt to water with sugar. You can add, year I think some really popular ones were bourbon brined turkey, which adds bourbon to the brine. And anytime you add bourbon to anything, a glass mainly. Then you usually add some aromatic spices. Some people add molasses or maple syrup. And, you know, you just kind of have this salty, sweet, aromatic mixture that you put in there. It's really important to rinse the brine off once you take the turkey out of it.
Good point.
Yeah. And then it is also very important to dry the turkey off after you've taken it out of the bag, after you've brined it, after you've done anything, because drying it off gets rid of that excess moisture on the skin and you get crispier
skin. Crispy skin.
Yeah.
That's the best part.
So I could nerd out over the molecular structure of salt and turkey meat.
That's always been something important to me in recipes that I feel like I miss sometimes is when I was first starting cooking and you would have those extra steps of like to dry it or like when you pat dry down your steaks before you cook them. When I was a new cook, I was like, well, that seems like a silly thing to do. I don't know why I would have to do that. I don't do it. Mm-hmm. But then when I actually learned why you have to do it, I'm like, that makes a ton of sense. Mm-hmm. So it is, you know, don't skip those things, you know, because you don't know. But then also going back to what you're talking about, like untested recipes. Last night even I was making something and I saw, I'm like, well, you know, I don't know why I would cook it that way. If you have an inkling that this might be a little off or wrong and you've made things similar, like go with your gut sometimes with those recipes. You don't have to follow everything to a T.
Yeah.
But then also do follow certain things to a T, you know.
I know you get creative. I see your creative adventures.
I try. I've had trying moments. Well, and I'll tell you a recipe that was not correctly written.
Mm-hmm.
Came with, I purchased these things where they send you food products and you make things. And one of the recipes was for a rice pudding. And it made no sense that, because it was, I go, boy, this is a lot of water for, it was like 2/3 cup rice and like 3 cups water plus 2 additional cups of coconut milk. And I mean, it was just so much moisture. This made no sense. And it may have even been more moisture than that. But I said, okay, that's what it says. So let me give it a try. And it was just soup.
Yeah.
And I ended up having to drain everything off. And it wasn't. And actually, it tasted okay. But it's like, I don't think this was correct.
Yeah.
And did write to the, actually, several people wrote to the people going, this makes no sense. And they said, yes, that was a misprint.
Well,
that
was a misprint. I believe there was a recipe, and it happened in San Diego, and it was around the holidays a few years ago, that they had printed it in the newspaper, and it was like a some sort of deep fried dough, like a beignet or a donut or something. And it was supposed to have 2 tablespoons of water, and it called, and they called for like 2 cups of water or something. And people, you know, are conditioned to follow a recipe. And there was a, and since you're frying, you know, dough and hot grease, a lot, there was a lot of people that, you know, burned themselves. And so it is important to kind of look for those things, especially on the internet, if it just seems like way too much water or stuff like that. And then, you know, sometimes just going with your instinct is what kind of helps you build up that confidence as a creative cook too, because a lot of it is just knowing what you like and knowing a few basic procedures. Then you can kind of, you can wing it a little bit easier and feel more confident winging it.
Okay, and this is a call-in show, so if anyone has questions or tips or you'd like to share a recipe, you can give us a call, 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723.
We're here for you. I was gonna talk about, and Lindsay probably knows a little bit too, there's, you know, I notice at Safeway that we get a lot of interesting ingredients, and oftentimes I get very sad that I cannot buy them all before they start to get like kind of wrinkly on the shelf. But
Yeah. Are you talking about like vegetables and fruits?
Well, or just some vegetables that are a little more uncommon that people are, I don't know what to do with this. And a couple of them that lend really well to Thanksgiving and fall stuff is, if you've seen celeriac in the grocery store, is one of is delicious, and it's usually over kind of in the root vegetable area. It looks like a big dirty softball with weird stuff growing off of it, and that is the root of a celery.
That sounds
stuff.
Delicious.
Yeah, exactly. You would look at it and be like, no, no. And that one, yeah, it's really good. It's got kind of white flesh on the inside once you kind of rinse off all of the dustiness. And you can cook it down with, like, cream and make, like, a puree out of it and add it to mashed potatoes. It adds, like, a little bit of nutty, a little celery flavor, but kind of sweet. You can also roast it and stuff like that. The other one that I see a lot at the grocery store that a lot of people don't know about are Jerusalem artichokes or sunchokes.
Oh, I bought some, and I did sunchokes and some turnips and some gochujang. And yeah. Oh, my God, it was good.
Yeah. And those are, they look like little tubers. They look like ginger but smaller, sometimes over by the ginger. And those, you do not have to peel them, which was something I learned later in the game when – and they're small, like kind of tubers. They have a thin skin on them. You just kind of rinse them really well. And those you can roast, you can puree, you can make soup out of.
You've got a really unique flavor.
Yeah.
They just very much stand out.
They taste like artichoke. They're kind of sweet. They get really soft and creamy on the inside. So that's another one that...
And you just eat them as they are, or do you make them into something? Or?
I would say, like, especially like Jerusalem artichokes would be a great addition if you cut them up really small into stuffing. If you did any kind of roasted vegetables for Thanksgiving, those are good. It's really just, you know, toss them in olive oil, a little bit of salt and pepper, and roast them. Or like I said, with the celeriac too, parsnips is another one that you can cook down and add to mashed potatoes that adds a nice rooty sweet texture. But those are a couple of the ones that I see at the grocery store quite often that a lot of people are like, I don't know what to do with that. Yeah. But and then any time of year too, they work really well in the fall. She just showed me a recipe for a more of a maple root stir fry kind of Korean. Ooh, David Chang's awesome.
Yeah, but,
an aside there.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. This is
the was this one for the celeriac or for the
sunchokes?
Yeah, for the sunchokes, and they're relatively inexpensive. They hold pretty well, just like a potato does. So if you're ever at the grocery store and try to find some of these stuff, you know, bring one home and Google it and find a recipe that looks similar to something that you already enjoy. And then you can kind of incorporate it in there. And then once you're kind of familiar with the flavor or whatever, then you can, you know, kind of expand your base on that. But
okay. And going back to the turkey.
Yes.
And again, you know, people make different things, but right now we'll just focus on the turkey for a moment. But you mentioned, okay, you prefer to brine it. Mm-hmm. Then what do you do? How do you cook it? Are you basting it? Are you just covering it and letting it cook?
I'm a purist. We were talking about this earlier. I will usually either like stuff butter underneath the skin. One of the things that I do with turkey is we all know that you don't need to stuff your stuffing into the turkey. That makes your turkey cook longer. You end up with overcooked turkey and undercooked stuffing. So it's just best to cook it off to the side. But I will usually shove any sort of citrus up there into the turkey cavity. But I'll stick grapefruits and limes and lemons and usually like a handful of fresh thyme and shallots and stuff kind of in there. And their only purpose is to create steam. And so they're going to kind of cook and how, and they're going to have this aromatic steam that's going to cook through them from the inside as the heat is cooking from the outside. And always make sure it's really dry. I'm liberal salt and pepper. Rub it down with just a little bit of oil. You don't need a lot.
Yeah, don't be afraid of the salt and pepper. You know, it use a lot on the outside.
And if you do brine, like I said, rinse it off, and you're still going to need to season it. Oh, the other thing that I did notice, if you have a turkey that says enhanced flavor, a lot of your Butterball pre-treated turkeys, those you're not going to want to brine because they've already been brined. That's why you have a flawless turkey every time, is because Butterball has done a lot of research to figure out and has injected your turkey basically with brine and butter. And so I would not practice brining a turkey because then you're going to get oversalted. And then I think I've usually on this, you know, on the turkey, it's going to give you that, how many pounds per hour kind of thing. You can usually stick with that. I definitely recommend for all things large cuts of meat, buy a meat thermometer, buy a simple $2 bimetallic meat thermometer and use it.
Nobody wants undercooked or overcooked turkey.
No. And the little popper thing, you know, is not tried and true, but it's 165 degrees, keep everybody safe. Usually you're gonna do that from the thickest part of the breast and right inside that little thigh kind of area. And then the carryover cooking on a turkey, if you pull it out at, 155 or 160 degrees, it's going to continue cooking for about 10 to 15 minutes, and it's usually going to raise another five degrees.
Here's a good tip that just popped in my head, too. When you do take the turkey out of the oven, you have to let it rest.
Yes.
Or else you're going to lose all that moisture, which I know is really difficult. I have trouble with that one.
How long do you need to let it rest?
About 20 minutes, and that's going to, you're basically going to get all of that, those fats and juices and muscle fibers are all super hot, and you want to kind of let them, and they're reacting and bouncing all over the place, and you want to kind of come back to, like, stasis, and that blood's going to kind of start to coagulate a little bit, and the juices, I know that sounds delicious, and all those juices are going to kind of move back into the, start grabbing back onto the proteins in the turkey, and then when you carve it, you're not going to get that rush of all the juices. And then what else? I always feel like a lot of people have troubles with gravy and the pan drippings. Do you have any insight on that one?
I love making the gravy.
Yeah. I do too.
It's my favorite part, I think.
And I think if you have extra stock, that's always good because that all of your gravy drippings is not possibly not going to be enough for all of the gravy needs that you have in your life. And you want leftovers.
I make lots of gravy and stuffing.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Those are my favorites.
Me too.
So, and you can sometimes a good thing that I've done with the pan drippings, too, is if you can kind of spoon off the fat drip from the drippings, you can use that fat to make your roux or your flour and fat slurry that's going to thicken it, and that's going to keep some of that turkey flavor in there. And I will note, too, especially with the pre-brined turkeys or your butter balls or whatever, or if, your pan dried out during cooking, go ahead and taste those drippings, because if they did get super salty or they did get burnt somewhere through the thing, then you're going to spend a lot of time making gravy that's not going to taste delicious.
Mm-hmm. You always want to taste everything while well, as you go, you know, season taste, add this taste, you know, because then you're like, oh, this needs a little more of this or a little less of this, so you can thin it out. Or
yeah, you'd be amazed in culinary school. We would get marked down if the instructor didn't see you tasting throughout the dish. And it's just – you get going and you forget, or you're following a recipe and you're like, oh, all those things went in there. And it's good to do, again, for kind of gaining that confidence in your own cooking, is like knowing what things taste like through the process and you know, what your salt tolerances or what your flavor tolerances are different than whoever wrote that recipe. So I'm always, you know, and people talk about, oh, I don't put salt in stuff because of the sodium. And I'm here to tell you, research shows, if your processed foods is where your sodium's coming from, that's like the 5 billion times more than you need per day. If you're making food from scratch and you're salting it with kosher salt or salting it by hand, there's very little possibility that you can salt your food enough to really have the tremendous amount of sodium impact that, say, more processed foods do, which, you know, I indulge as well. But, you know, salting your vegetables and salting that stuff so that it really brings out flavor is not a shortcut that I recommend.
And that's also the good point, though, is even reading labels on things, how much salt, see how much salt is in it already if you're packaging stuff. A lot of soups are incredibly salty.
Yeah, and if you're making stovetop or something like that, obviously you're not gonna need to adjust the seasonings too much, because a lot of that comes pretty well adjusted
already.
Yeah, but if you're making stuff from scratch, and I the other thing I always feel like gets forgotten, and one that has always been kind of a staple at our Thanksgiving, is some sort of excuse me, getting hungry, like your crunchies and your raws and your, like, we usually always either have like a carrot salad,
you make a good carrot salad.
Yeah. And the one I did for your wedding was delicious.
can you explain that recipe?
Well, one of the fun things I like, well, the one I did for hers was roasted carrots, but we always did a raw one, and we'll play around with it. I like to take the vegetable peeler, and rather than grating the carrots, peel them down to their tiny little nubs and then eat the tiny little nubs. And then you kind of have these ribbons of carrot. sorry. And usually dress it really lightly with, I usually use Greek yogurt and a little bit of vinegar and sugar, put some raisins in there, a little bit of cardamom, a little bit of cumin. It's always nice to have something
a little light,
fresh, because you have so much heavy
casserole
food.
Potatoes, stuffing, turkey. Like, no wonder everyone's passing out.
Exactly. The other one too is like an apple fennel salad. Fennel's a really great addition to, like, if you're buying, you know, it's a great addition to stuffing. But raw fennel has a slight anisey flavor. If you've never had it, it kind of has a texture like celery. Apples and fennel go really well together, so then you kind of, it's still kind of that fall harvesty flavors. Don't forget the crunchy. There's not enough crunchy on the Thanksgiving table.
And so is your crunchy your vegetable?
Usually,
fruits, or
I like to do the apple salad or the carrot salad or something like that, and it just kind of breaks it up a little bit. But I will say, what was it? One year, I grew up here, and one year for Thanksgiving, I believe we had one of those pull-out tables with all the leaves, and we had a million people coming over for the holidays, and we had it almost completely set, except for the turkey, and the light bulb right above our Thanksgiving table exploded.
Oh.
And our entire Thanksgiving, it was like a Christmas story. Like, the whole spread was just ruined. There was shards of
glass and all the food
of light bulb and everything. I think we just ate turkey that year.
Okay. If I can read this, I don't know what this means, but perhaps you do. Do you know about spatchcocked turkeys? What does that that's what this is. If I can read this correctly, isn't that what that looks like?
Yes, it does. Spatchcocked. Is that like a...
I don't know.
We can look
quick
it
internet
up,
look.
Yeah, exactly. We're gonna Google this real quick, folks. And
or what's where it's cut open and
like
I've done that with a pig.
Okay, this is
where you've cut the back open and kind of splayed it out. Okay, I'm not. Sorry, I've
not heard that term myself.
Spatchcock's going on the list of vocab words, that's for sure. Yes, you can brine a spatchcock.
Oh, it's one word.
Oh, okay. I kind of like the hyphen.
That makes a difference.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, now I recognize the term.
No. Yeah, and that one, like, you're going to go in up through the underside if you have some really good kitchen shears or a knife, and you can basically kind of – I'm trying to visualize it while
But so you're cutting the back as opposed to the breast
cutting
size.
The
you're
back, cutting the back. Yeah, and then you basically can kind of flay it outwards and press it down, and you're going to get it all kind of flattened. Then you would kind of fold the drumstick under, and it does help to keep it, make the whole turkey one consistent thickness so that it's going to cook a little more evenly.
Might be a nice way to grill, too, if you wanted
you
to grill a
grilled
turkey.
Or smoked that way would be really nice. But, yeah, especially if your turkey is not already pre-enhanced or pre-brined or anything like that, I would definitely recommend brining turkey like that. And throughout the year, brining whole chickens is super easy. You do it overnight. Pork loins, except they often have the ones for sale at Safeway, but those ones are already pre-brined. But
And they're also, I had another question about advice on carving your turkey.
The best way to cut and cook, well, usually I prefer the leg and the thigh, so I will just take those off immediately and set those aside for myself.
My plate.
Yeah.
And you're just feeling for the joint.
Yeah, you're coming in for the joint, and you can, the best thing to do is kind of, a nice sharp knife. I always recommend a nice sharp knife.
Unless you want to cut yourself.
And you're going to kind of go in between the leg and the thigh and pull that out. And if you can hit that thigh joint right there, you're not going to cut through any bones. And those are going to come off. The breast, the best way to do it for slicing, I think, is to kind of just take the breast off where you kind of come down the sternum and follow the bone along. I know I'm doing hand gestures here. and then you can kind of just take the breast off. It's usually nice to slice the breast at a diagonal if you can, like kind of go into the meat at a 45-degree angle just because of the texture.
So they call it like against the grain or with the grain?
You're going against the grain with turkey, and that's – again, cutting those fibers so that they're more chewable. Turkey at that point is pretty tender anyway, but with more fibrous meats, if you go with the grain, that's where you get like a chewy texture, like if you're cutting a flank steak or something along the lines of the grain, makes it chewier. But
And you both mentioned you like the dark meat. I like the light meat. So I always thought you have to have a party where you invite people so not everybody's eating the one type.
I don't know if it was because I always got last dibs and everyone, but I just, you know, I come from, I'm sorry, mother and grandmother out there, but I come from a long line of turkey overcookers.
Oh.
My mom lives in Port Protection. She can't hear this. But
her friends.
So, yeah, exactly. And so I think I just always went for the leg and the thigh. And
you know what my grandma did? She always cooked the turkey a day ahead of time. And so we didn't have the beautiful presentation of like the turkey on the table, but she had it cooked the day before and then all cut up and divvied out, dark in one plate, white on the other. And it was really, I think it made things a lot easier for her.
Less stressful.
Day of.
Yeah. That's actually maybe another idea. What about things to make your cooking less stressful? You know, because you're dealing with a lot of different things. Do you have any tips on that? Of if you're trying to prepare a bunch of different things and, you know, keeping it so also you don't have the 8 million dishes at the end and things at the end.
There are plenty of things on the Thanksgiving table that can be made ahead of time. The green bean casserole, you know, can be really simply heated up. It can be at room temperature. Try to cook as many things ahead of time. Stuffing can be done the day before and just kind of heated back up. Depending on your oven space, if you're anything like me, you get to cook one thing at a time. So Thanksgiving takes all week long. But there's a lot of things you can do beforehand, too. Like on days like today, you know, you can cut up carrots and celery and onions and put them in Ziploc bags. You can I'm a big mise en place person. So if I'm making carrot salad, then I cut up all my carrots for my stuffing. I do all my carrots for my salad and move along, and then kind of assembly line everything. And then on, you know, Thanksgiving morning or the day before, you're just kind of pulling out already prepped items, and you can save yourself a lot of time that way and a lot of counter space. Mashed potatoes, that's one that if it's best to cook the potatoes and mash them at the same time on the same once your potatoes start to cool, the starches start to either get back, kind of suck back in, and so you're not going to get as fluffy a mashed potatoes. So it's best to do them, you know, get them cooked, get them drained, let them cool slightly, and then do the mashing from there.
And basically be right before the meal.
Yeah. And I mean, you can, a lot of these things, and I'm, you know, as far as from a health perspective and stuff like that, you know, you can serve certain foods at room temperature. They, you know, as long, the worst part is like letting them sit out throughout the course of the evening, and anything over 4 hours is when you start to get in that whole danger zone situation and whatnot. But if you have dishes that you know, you're putting together throughout the course of the day and you're reheating and stuff like that, that's fine. And I'm trying to think of some of the other stuff you make beforehand.
Get other people to bring stuff.
Yeah.
Ask for
share.
Help.
There you go. Share.
Exactly.
Share the dirt duties.
Yeah. Last year, we always do a Friendsgiving here in Ketchikan. And last year, because I am the first type of person that I am, I was like, well, I'm going to make everything because then I know that it will all be delicious. No, I knew everyone was going to bring delicious things, but I was like, I'll do this. And I just found,
put them out.
I just found my list from last year, and I had sent it to a friend. I'm like, I'm not doing this year. I'm not doing it. So we divvied out everyone's stuff this year, and I think it's going to be a lot more relaxing making two things instead of 12 things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We just have a couple minutes left, so if there's any last minute calls out there, get them in now, 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. Do either of you have any sort of specialty, I guess, that you're planning to make this year? Anything in particular that you're excited about?
I'm going to try something new this year, which is different for me because I'm a purist, comes from like cameo. My family's Quaker farmers on my mom's side, so we always were very traditional. But this year, I'm going to make roasted butternut squash with lentils, goat cheese, and walnuts. That's going to be one of my dishes.
That sounds delicious. Good times.
Yeah.
Good times. And it sounds as though a big part of it is experimenting. I mean, sometimes sticking with the tried and true. I'm one who sticks with the tried and true. Mm-hmm. If I have, you know, this stuffing recipe works for me, I really like it, so I'm going to do it every year. Or this is how I like to do my turkey, I'm going to do it this way. And I actually have tried the turkey different ways, and I go back to
how mine is
constant basting, which a lot of people don't want to deal with.
Exactly.
But it's about every 20 minutes, and I'm all the butter and all that and whatever. But I tend to the turkey, and it's this like a nice ritual.
It's a meditative thing.
It is. All day I'm just – hello, turkey.
And I feel like if you're in the mood to branch out, like pick one thing. Like if you want to try making homemade cranberry sauce, do that. And don't try to do buns and roll. Like don't try to change up everything. And we're doing Moroccan Christmas, you know. but yeah, and this year I'm roasting a leg of lamb. My sister got one. And so we're going to do lamb and turkey this year.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. But
okay, and we have a caller. Pauline is joining us. Go ahead, Pauline.
Yeah, hi. I was just wondering, you know, because I want to make garlic mashed potatoes. Mm-hmm. And somebody told me that I could just go ahead and put how many garlic, you know, for my personal taste.
Mm-hmm.
They said I could go ahead and boil the garlic in with the potatoes.
I've done that before.
Yeah, you can do that. One of the things that's going to help you out with is it's going to cut down the kind of the acid in the garlic if raw garlic does not sit well with some people, that boiling it's going to mellow it out a little bit and bring out a little bit of sweeter flavor. Another thing too is if you can take a whole head of garlic and wrap it in tin foil and sprinkle it with a little bit of salt and olive oil and throw it in the oven while other things are cooking. Roasted garlic is delicious in mashed potatoes, and that's a really easy way to just roast it. You just kind of let it sit in there until the whole thing feels soft. And
okay, so so I just put a little bit of oil in there.
Yeah, just a tiny bit of olive oil and a tiny bit of salt on a, you know, do 3 or 4 heads, and if you have leftover, it goes on all kinds of other stuff. Just wrap it really tightly in aluminum foil, and while something else is cooking, throw it in there. Usually takes about a half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And once it gets kind of soft, it'll get a little caramely. And then once it cools off, you can just kind of squeeze all of the meat right out of the garlic head.
Yeah, I guess, and just squeeze out. I mean,
and that's great in the mashed potatoes, too. But the boiling, it also works.
I'm sorry?
I'm a garlic freak. You know, garlic's healthy for you anyway.
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, too, a good tip with the boiling potatoes is it's actually better to boil potatoes starting with cold water and then bringing it to a boil. Yeah, a lot of people think you have to throw it in the hot water, and that's just dangerous.
No.
That's just excessive.
It's kind of like blanching it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you, and happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you too.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Pauline. Happy Thanksgiving as well. Well, we're out of time. Do you have any, how time flies.
And I know.
Perhaps we'll have to do this again for other subjects. Any last minute thoughts or tips you'd like to give?
Just, you know, surround yourself with people you love on Thanksgiving, and, you know, it's a good time to sit back and be grateful for everything that you have and everything that you will have in the future, and hold those people dear. Thanksgiving gets me all warm and fuzzy inside.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, enjoy your Thanksgivings, and we thank folks for calling in and listening in here to KRBD Ketchikan. And again, thank you to Cameo McRoberts and Lindsay Johnson for coming in this morning.